Welcome into episode number 4 of the SEC Football Hour. I'm Chase Robinson, Chris Lee, also alongside per usual, as we're going to give you some great SEC football talk over the next hour here. We got a lot to dive into. We're going to talk some Arkansas football. Ty Richardson took some time, joined me earlier this week to preview the Razorbacks. We'll get some insight from him coming up. We'll also count down the top 5 offensive units in the SEC. That's going to be fun to see what we think about some teams and their offenses this year. We'll also, of course, give our coach quote and some other stuff along the way as well. But first, we got to tell you about our friends, as always, at Bet Online. They bring you all this great content here on Southeastern 14. They're your number one source for all of your sports betting needs this season, from baseball, golf, soccer, right now to all the top fights in the UFC and MMA and boxing, every stat, every matchup, and even live odds and spreads while the games are being played. When the game's over, head on over to the online casino, get in on a game of blackjack or poker, unwind with one of the over 150 slots games. Head over to the website today to get in on the action. Use promo code BELIEVE, that is BLEAV, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. That is promo code BELIEVE, BLEAV. Bet online, the game starts here. So, Chris, another week and another week closer to SEC football. We're almost in the month of July as we're doing this. It's June 26th, so next week's July. And I feel like when July gets here, it feels like, hey, college football season is almost here.
Yeah, go outside for 2 seconds and it will feel just like July, even though we're not in July yet. It is a reminder that we are just a few weeks away from media day, from fall camp, all the stuff that people look forward to. And boy, I look forward to this show today, too. You've set a great agenda.
We will once again start out with one big question. We do this for 3 teams each week. And so today we're going to answer or look at one big question for Alabama, Florida, and Ole Miss. We'll start with the Crimson Tide. And here's my one big question on Alabama, Chris, is do they have enough weapons around Jalen Milroe? This is kind of in the offseason. A lot of guys hit the portal. They brought in some receivers, but I feel like the room is not as deep and as good as we've seen the receiver room at Alabama in years past. We saw some guys kind of break out in the spring, and I think they're good at running back, but do they have enough weapons, enough guys for Jalen Milroe to throw to that will consistently make catches? He's going to have to throw the ball a lot this year in this Kalen DeBoer offense. And so I'm curious, do they have enough weapons specifically at receiver for Jalen Milroe to be successful?
Yeah, look, I think that's a great question. That was actually on the list of questions I was considering asking. And Alabama's always going to have talent, right? This is the team that made the playoff last year. A lot of those guys back, including Jalen Milroe. But you look at past Alabama teams, it's not a running back room with Mark Ingram and Derrick Henry. It's not the receiver room Mac Jones had. You lost your tight end, Amari Nyeblack. I think we know Alabama's going to have good players. The question is, does it have players that are just good, or do they approach the lofty status we've seen for some Alabama position groups? So I think where that question settles is going to have a lot to say about how well Alabama does.
Yeah, I certainly agree with that. So Chris, what is your one big question for the Tide?
Well, Chase, I have been keeping these preseason power rankings of the 134 teams just to kind of give me an idea of where some of these teams, are ranking in the preseason order. And right now I'm using Athlon's, Lindy's, FPI, SP Plus, waiting on Phil Steele. Allegedly that's going to make its way to our area, but it hasn't yet. And so I'm just kind of like, how do these computers rank 1 to 34 in terms of opponents? And Alabama has got 5 teams inside my composite top 14 on its schedule so far. That's Georgia, Missouri, LSU, Tennessee, Oklahoma. And not that the other games are cakewalks. Auburn's on there. We know about that. Road trip to Wisconsin. Some other games on there, too, that Alabama will be favored to win. But here's my question. If Alabama loses 3 games, can it make the playoffs? Now, I'm not asking you, will Alabama lose 3 games? I'm just asking you to accept the premise of my question. You know, the losses in there would be, probably Georgia, perhaps at Tennessee, perhaps at LSU. But that means that Alabama only loses three. They would have won at Wisconsin, won at Oklahoma, won some of those games, right? Alabama will have won two games against top 14, 15 opponents and swept the rest of its schedule, if that's the case. If so, would a three-loss Alabama team make the playoff?
You know, that's so interesting that we're even able to have that conversation now with the expansion of the 12-team playoff, because obviously in years past, you know, two losses kept you out. But with this new era of a 12-team playoff, like, that's a great question. Is that possible? Like, could a team do that? And, you know, that's going to be something we're going to have to find out, you know, when that time rolls around. And I just have a hard time believing, though, that any three-loss team would be one of the best 12, because I feel like there's going to it's set up that there could be a number of 10-2 teams, with two losses. But where would they stack up? And like you mentioned, I think strength of schedule may have something to do with it. And based off of Alabama's losses and who they lost to, but who they beat, will definitely, you know, go a long way. But I just have a hard time thinking that a three-loss team, and again, this is something we're going to have to learn of who the committee's going to put in, but I just have a hard time thinking that a three-loss team could be in the playoff. But I could be wrong.
Here's why I think it's an interesting discussion, Chase. You see it in basketball. Like, the way that basketball has made the decision has changed in recent years. You've seen the committee drop RPI. You've seen it go to predictive metrics and say, well, you know, this team was 20-13, but it was number 18 in KenPom or whatever, and all those things. The criteria have changed, and I think we've made some steps in a good direction. The other thing you see the committee do at times is use things to justify this or that. You could say, well, the committee wanted to do it and just threw out reasons, and that might be fair. But I look at strength of schedule has always been a thing that committees have used to say, this is why we did this or didn't do that. You're scheduling a road trip to Wisconsin in the middle of an SEC schedule that's got you playing Georgia. You got a road trip to Tennessee. You got Missouri on that schedule. You got a trip to LSU. You got a trip to Oklahoma. So, you know, could the committee go, hey, wait a minute. You know, they played at Tennessee. They played Georgia. They played at LSU. Might not be five teams in the country that would win any of those games if the teams are as good as we think and everybody's going to be fired up to play Alabama. I could just see, if it gets close, the committee citing something like that. I'm not saying it's right. I'm not saying it's wrong. But I think a three-loss Alabama team, if that happened, would be a very interesting litmus test to see how the committee thinks through these things in this era of 12-team playoff football.
Yeah, I agree with you. I really do. Speaking of schedules, we'll go to our second team that we have one big question about. That's the Florida Gators. My one big question for Florida is, do they have enough depth to withstand the schedule that they have? We've talked about it on this show, in our schedule preview videos. Like, this is probably the toughest schedule in the country, not just the SEC, but in all of college football. And like, do they have enough depth at every position, especially on defense? I think their offense is all right. Do they have enough depth, you know, really on both sides of the ball, but especially on defense, to withstand this schedule, to withstand the teams that they're playing, to be able to change things up if they need to? I think that's a big question for Billy Napier heading into this year. And that's kind of my question for Florida.
I like it. I think that's going to be important, because we all know the SEC can push you, and by November, nobody's playing at 100% strength. But here's the thing. We have sort of approached Florida from a negative standpoint, really since probably, I don't know, the middle of last year, because all the talk has been Billy Napier. Is he the right guy? Can he survive? And now it's, okay, now you got the schedule as the extra layer. I feel like we focused all our attention on those things. Chase, started taking a little bit of a look at all SEC teams and personnel and stuff this week, and lost in that fact, Graham Mertz played really, really well last year. He's got, 230-something straight passes without an interception, really hard to do. They've got Montrell Johnson Jr., who's been a really good running back for them ever since he's been there. Lindy's preseason first team all-SEC guy. They've got Eugene Wilson, who is the next up-and-coming star receiver for them. They've got an offensive line that's got a lot of experience. They may not all be guys that have got that experience at Florida, but it seems like Austin Barber, among other people, has been there forever. I just wonder, in all the focus on those other things, are we missing out that, hey, maybe the Gators could actually field a good offense and make things a little more interesting than we are talking about?
Yeah. I think you said that well, of we get lost in the fact that it's a lot of questions about this team. But Graham Mertz is a guy who we've seen what he's been able to do as a quarterback. Like, I think he, if he has a good season, I think Florida could go along with that. You know, their record could reflect that because they do have some guys around him. So I think that's a great question. Like, what, you know, what can the offense look like? How, and again, there's a lot of negative talk, and they have a chance to prove a lot of people wrong this year, I think, in winning some games that maybe they shouldn't.
All right. Yeah. I think that's going to be interesting to watch. And I'm glad you laid out the homework assignment the way you did, because it makes me come up with angles I hadn't thought of. And I think that's one that maybe people are sleeping on.
Yeah, for sure. So that is our one big question on Florida. Let's move to the Ole Miss Rebels. My big question for Ole Miss is, I think offensively, like, again, Lane Kiffin with a third year quarterback, Jackson Dart, they're going to be really good. My question is, can their defense be elite enough to get them into the college football playoff? We've seen games from LSU or from Ole Miss. I think of the LSU matchup the last couple of years, where Ole Miss has played great offensively, but they haven't played great defensively, and teams have been able to stay in games with them. Can their defense stop who they need to stop? Keep teams out of the end zone enough for Ole Miss to win enough games to get to the college football playoff? Again, I think offensively there's no problem there. But can Pete Golding lead the defense, have the personnel he needs to be elite? You got to have elite defense, I think, to be in the college football playoff talk. Can Ole Miss do that? I think that's my question.
Yeah. Spoiler alert. Ole Miss's offense is going to come up again in this podcast. For at least one of us. I don't know about both of us, because we hadn't compared notes. So with that, I did what you did, Chase. I started thinking, let's think of something on defense. And I did something that's a little bit, if you dive into your question, this one has to come up. And that's Walter Nolan. When Walter Nolan came out of high school, he was the number one recruit in the country, according to some people. And the bad thing about being number one, Chase, is you can never outstrip your expectations. You can only live up to them or fail. And to be fair, Walter Nolan has been a good player, but I don't know that he's been a number one prospect in the country type player yet. And now he's changing schools. Looking at Lindy's again. I keep going back to Lindy's, but I hadn't found some of the other ones yet. And they do a good job anyway. But Lindy's did not list him among its top 10 NFL prospects in league, which was a little surprising to me. Named him second team preseason All-SEC. Okay, there's some good defensive linemen in this year, but I think if you'd said Walter Nolan's a junior, you would have thought he would have been on both lists by now. He's not. I'm interested to see if he can, maybe saying live up to the hype is unfair because of the reasons I outlined, but can he approach the hype is what I would like to know. And if he does, I think that's going to be very important for Ole Miss.
I agree with you. I really do. And so I think it could be a fun year in Oxford if everything lines up the way I think it could. And so Ole Miss fans, yeah, I'd like to be excited about, I think, coming up in this 2024 SEC football season. So that is our one big question for Alabama, Florida, and Ole Miss here on episode 4 of the SEC Football Hour. So the Arkansas Razorbacks, we've talked some about Arkansas. You know, a lot of questions going into this year. A lot of close games lost last year, which sets up what could be a very important year for Sam Pittman and the Razorbacks. I had a chance to catch up earlier this week with Ty Richardson. He is the host of the Morning Rush on ESPN Arkansas, also with HitThatLie.com. And so here is my conversation on some Razorback football with Ty Richardson. We're going to talk some Arkansas football now. Ty Richardson joins us from ESPN Arkansas, and it's going to be a fun year, I think, for the Razorbacks. So, Ty, appreciate you hopping on and talking some Razorback football with us today.
Chase, absolutely, man. Always happy to jump on Southeastern 14. Are y'all in the midst of having to change your name? Like, what's the? I was thinking about that as I popped on. As like
very soon it will be Southeastern 16. Okay. Very soon. So,
I'm sure Chris is just loving the idea of having to fill out all the paperwork and everything else he's going to have to do this next few weeks.
Yes. So it will be very soon when that happens. But hey, it's about to be a new year for Arkansas football, and there's a lot to get into. But I want to start with Bobby Petrino. He's back, offensive coordinator. He was successful in his time as a head coach. Obviously, everybody knows the way it all ended there. What led to his return, and what's kind of the vibe of having him back there as the offensive coordinator?
It sure sounds like, Chase, that it was Sam Pittman reaching out to Hunter Yurecek, Yurecek having to clear that with the right channel as Arkansas athletics director, and then kind of came to fruition. I don't remember. The timeline is a little faded on me. I can't remember if Bobby reached out or if it was Sam who initially reached out first, but there was mutual interest, and obviously there is now because he's the offensive coordinator. It was originally a huge splash. I think they were hoping that it would fund some more NIL efforts, and according to Arkansas Edge, which is Arkansas's really big NIL initiative, it hasn't. They've been doing this Drive for Five campaign. They've got less than 900 members, to my knowledge, at this current moment. So it hasn't been as successful there. But the important thing is to translate to wins. I think there will be more of an app to donate and petition. Now, we've still got to wait on what the new NIL structure looks like with revenue sharing and everything. But I think Arkansas fans are cautiously optimistic, but they got burned pretty bad last year. I mean, this was a team that was preseason number three of the SEC West. And Chase, they were nowhere near close to that, brother.
Yeah, for sure. And when you look at the offense now under Bobby Petrino, I mean, Boise State transfer Talen Green comes in at quarterback. You got some guys coming back around him and some transfers. How do you see the offense going under Petrino with the pieces that he now has?
I think the offense is going to be good. They returned like 93-92% of their pass catchers from last year, Chase, including a freshman All-American and Luke Haz, not too far from Bixby, Oklahoma. You've got some other guys in Isaac Tesla. I love Andrew Armstrong. I felt like that he was held back last year. I think he's going to have 1,000-plus yards this season. I really am a believer in him. I was glad when he's come back. Tyrone Broden. They've got some guys that you could say, okay, they might be able to compete in the SEC. And then, again, it's figuring that system and that quarterback. The offensive line, like you mentioned, that's still a question mark. It was so bad last year, and it was just inexplicable. Like, you should never have an offensive line that bad when Sam Pittman is your head football coach, regardless if he's watching him every day or not. It should never look like that, and it did. And you think about 2 years prior to last season, they were the number one team in the Power Five in rushing. And then this past season, they gave up a bevy of sacks, didn't run the ball well. It was just a combination of a bunch of issues. So I think offense is going to be not just marginally better, but consistently better. Defense, though, might take a step back. They kind of trailed off at the end of the season just because they were gassed. But I mean, you look at some of those games, like in the first half against LSU or a good chunk of Alabama, a good chunk of Ole Miss, they held some pretty potent offensives down. You got to give Travis Williams credit in year one. They lost a lot in year two, especially at the linebacker core, Chase.
Yeah, and just kind of looking at the roster, the depth chart, maybe depth may be an issue on defense in some places.
Yep, always is, man. Arkansas has never, probably since Broyles was here, has never had that consistency at depth on the defensive side of the football, particularly in a defensive line and linebackers. And you think about the SEC, where you have to be a stalwart at that position. It's particularly up front. And they'll have a guy, I think they'll be okay coming off the edge. Like, they have Landon Jackson back. He'll be one of the better defensive ends in the SEC. That June Kai guy that they got out of, I think, JUCO ball. I think it was just lower-level classification football. Led, I think it was FCS in sacks. But then after, like, it's up front. It's in that middle. Like, there's no Terrence Cody in the middle for Arkansas. Man, it'd be nice to have a Mount Cody up front. But you just don't have that. And there are some guys that maybe you like their future, but it's not deep there in the interior whatsoever, Jason. Linebacker core, you lose Jaheim Thomas back to his former coach and Luke Fickell. Chris Poupal goes to Ole Miss. You got Crook going elsewhere. I think there was one or two other linebacker transfers, and he brought in some guys you're excited about, including Xavion Sori. Brad Spence might take a step, but there are still some depth questions that are worthy to be brought up heading into this season that we're now only 65 days out from, Chase, to Arkansas football. It's pretty wild.
It is. And, you know, a lot of talk going into the season of Sam Pittman. Will he make it through? Will he survive the season? What do you, in your opinion, what do you think it will take for Sam Pittman to be back as the head coach at Arkansas? What will this year have to look like?
Let's make a bowl game. I know it's easier said and done. 3 non-conference. You're not going to beat Oklahoma State in week 2. I'd love for it to happen, but you're going up against a 7-year quarterback in Alan Bowman, best running back in college football in Ollie Gordon, an underrated home venue in Stillwater, Oklahoma, at Boone Pickett Stadium. You're not going to win that game, and I'm okay with that. I've already honestly penciled it in as a loss. Now, I don't want him to get beat by 35, but I think when you look past that, you got that road game against Auburn right after your home opener against UAB. You've got the final game in Jerry World against Texas A&M. You've got to find a way to beat Mike Elko in year 1, and then you beat Mississippi State on the road, and then you got to win 1 or 2 home games. So there's 6 wins in the schedule, and I say 6 regular season wins plus a bowl win. That gives the fans, okay, you made a 3-win jump from last year. It's still not great necessarily we want to be, but at least it's progress, and that's what I want to see is progress. I'm not asking for the moon this season. I'm not asking him to go 9-3 regular season, get to 10 wins, but you can't have a losing record again, I don't believe, this upcoming year.
Yeah. And you look back to last year, I mean, BYU lost 38-31, LSU lost 34-31, Ole Miss 27-20, Alabama 24-21. So many close games last year, they just weren't able to finish. And really, that's been a trend under really the last couple of years. I was looking at something like 3-9 in 1-score games. That's tough.
It's brutal, Chase. And like I think about those games I was at when I was in Oxford, Mississippi, and watched KJ throw that final interception. Or I was in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. I watched Jalen Milroe make the throw of his life on like a 3rd and 10 where it went over the linebacker and under the safety, and his guy somehow caught it. Or I was in Baton Rouge where they could not stop Jaden Daniels in the second half because he was throwing to a Brian Thomas and a Malik Nabers, which are NFL wide receivers. And it's just he didn't have NFL corners necessarily on the outside. So they battled on the road, but they got walloped at home. I mean, you're looking at that schedule. They got walloped by Auburn. They got walloped by Missouri. They didn't show up against Mississippi State. Like, they can't do that at home this year, and it's a tough schedule. I mean, you've got Tennessee's going to be good under Nico this year, quarterback, I think. LSU, I know it's a revamped LSU team, but shouldn't take Brian Kelly lightly. And then you've got Ole Miss, who might be the best team outside of Georgia and Texas in the conference, and Texas, who might be the SEC, one of the SEC champion representatives. So it's a long road. I'm excited to take that journey, though. Started in about 65 days, Chase.
Yeah. What's the vibe around the fans around the football program right now?
It's not great. And I don't blame them at all. I mean, your basketball program just hired a Hall of Fame coach and John Calipari, and those expectations have even been heightened since Musk brought them to that kind of Sweet 16 Elite 8. Fans are thinking Final Four National Championship now in basketball. The baseball team fans just watched Tony Vitello, a former assistant, win a national championship after coming up short once again in a regional in your home ballpark, back-to-back years. So there's some discouragement there. And the combination, Chase, so 2 years ago when Arkansas was the number one team in baseball, they went to the Elite Eight in basketball, and they won 9 games in football in 2021, 2022, kind of that combo calendar year. It was awesome. Then they followed it up with the College World Series appearance that next season. This past season, they went 4-8 in football. They did not even come close to an NCAA tournament appearance, and baseball team, again, floundered when they shouldn't have. So it's not just the fans that are disappointed or not necessarily have the most ump for football. It's just as a whole. What I'm hoping is that this is a valley, and it's a short valley, and it rises to back to where it's a respectable level. And not that you weren't respectable in baseball this season, but I think fans expected a little more than to get bounced by SEMO and the Fayetteville Regional to not even make the regional final. So to your question, football's, it's not the best of hopes right now, but All it takes is a week two win in Stillwater to turn those Browns upside down, Chase.
Yeah, that's for sure. And you mentioned the schedule and just looking up and down, and specifically the Texas A&M game. It's the last one that'll be played in Arlington. Is that something that the fans are excited about, for that to get back to like the home and home, or is that something Arkansas likes going to Arlington to play?
So, Chase, the background, not only with Jerry Jones and Stephen Jones, the Cowboys executives, the owner, being Arkansans, and I say Arkansans, I think he was born in L.A., but Arkansas Razorbacks through and through, is like Arkansas won in 2009, 2010, 2011. Then A&M joined the SEC. They played the first game at College Station. Hogs got romped by Johnny. Next year's close, 8 or 12-point loss in Fayetteville to Johnny. Then they've done the Jerry World thing every year in the SEC since 2014. Arkansas has won one of those games. So fans have gotten tired of it. Now, if they were winning all the time, it'd be a vacation. It'd be a trip. It'd be a fun weekend. But it hasn't been fun. So they want them in Fayetteville. Think about the upping of ticket prices, donations, parking, everything that comes along with that. When fans see that they're losing a game to War Memorial Stadium in Little Rock and they're losing this game, it ticks them off. And yet they're still getting charged more. So fans in both parties, both in College Station and across the state of Arkansas, are glad this game is going back to home and home. Maybe there's a game in the future they play in Jerry World, because Jerry loves his Razorbacks, and I love Jerry for that. I'm not a Cowboy fan, but I love him for that. It's just not going to be with Texas A&M moving forward.
And you know, and this is a kind of a middle of the season game usually, but this is a big rivalry game. Like from what I see, you know, Arkansas and Texas A&M hate each other. I mean, is that the right vibe there?
Chase, let me tell you something. Texas is still the creme de la creme of hatred for the majority of Razorback fans. I think LSU is probably number two. Ole Miss is up there as well. For me, it's Texas A&M at number one. I hate that school with a burning passion. I hate everything about that cultish university in College Station. And what makes it worse is the stat I just mentioned, that every game since 2012, with the exception of 2021, they've won. And they haven't just won. Chase, if you go back and look at that series, they've won in the most excruciating ways possible. Like, I can tell you how every game ended from 2015 to last season. Like, with the exception of last year, and I guess my senior year, when that game was at like 8 a.m. and I was nearly blackout by like 4, those games have just been agonizing for Razorback teams, coaches, players, and fans. It's horrible. Yeah. And hoping they go out a high note this year, brother.
Yeah, for sure. And you mentioned Texas. I mean, that was a classic there, Arkansas and Texas. That's being, you know, rivalry kind of being renewed. But obviously, Texas, you know, one of the best teams in the country, you could say. Could you see that game in years to come being a good rivalry again?
So what I think happened in 2021, it was really cool to be in Donald W. Reynolds Razorback Stadium to the experiences. Is like, the grandparents and the parents and even the great-grandparents to a certain extent would tell the young folk, the kids, the grandkids, any connection, anyone that would listen whatsoever about this rivalry. Arkansas kids, with the exception of that 2014 bowl game against Texas in Houston, didn't really get to experience it at hand. And, I mean, there's only a certain amount of people that can go to Houston for a bowl game. They experienced it in 2021 on a cold September night. And I mean, it wasn't that cold, honestly. It actually felt great. I remember it like it was yesterday. So you have all these young people that a lot of Arkansas kids, and I say kids, a lot of Arkansas college students are from Texas. They didn't get into Austin, or they have friends that did. So they hate that school, not from an athletic standpoint. And they finally got to like breathe, not necessarily a sigh of relief, but like take in the rivalry for the first time in 7 years. And they played prior to that, I guess it was 2008, and they played early in the 2000s with one of my coworkers and former Arkansas quarterback Matt Jones, what he did in Austin. But that rivalry can really take off again. And Texas is never going to look at Arkansas like Arkansas fans look at Texas, which is fine. They're going to walk into buzzsaws some nights and some days if they continue to look at that. The Razorbacks do not have a great record overall against the Longhorns, but they're going to give them everything they got each time they play. Football, basketball, baseball, it is a heated rivalry, more from the Arkansas vantage point, but one that is going to be fun to watch in years to come if you're just a casual football, basketball, or baseball fan in the SEC.
Yeah. Before I let you go, and later on in the show, we're going to, Chris and I are going to give a make or break game for a few teams. Arkansas is one of those. So I want to get your opinion. What do you think on this schedule this year is a make or break game for the Razorbacks?
Chase, let me pull up the schedule real quick. Because I think if I remember correctly, the Tennessee game falls right before an Arkansas bye. And that's kind of the one I had penciled in as the game to look for. Yeah, Tennessee is right before the bye, October the 5th. I've got some friends coming in from Nashville that are Tennessee alums that are going to watch that game. So it's going to be like us in the visitor section in red with them in orange. I think that game, because Tennessee is a squad that, again, there's no East and West anymore. But it's a team that is kind of like, in my opinion, Georgia's top dog. And they're kind of in that like Texas, Ole Miss, maybe LSU line in Alabama. I don't think Alabama's going to compete for a title this year. I think they lose three games, but that's a team that really needs to win against Arkansas. And that'll be one of Nico's first kind of road games as a starting quarterback in this league, how he adjusts. And he's a five-star prodigy coming out of high school, but it's one thing to sling it in college. Can you do it in the SEC? And he's going to be tested. I forget that game's anywhere from, I think, 2:30 to 7. It's one of those flex games, if I remember that right. So hopefully it's a night game, and that's the game. If I had to pencil one in, Chase, I think that's one of the most pivotal. You can't, because you look at that schedule prior to, again, I don't think you're beating Oklahoma State. Auburn, probably not. A&M's a toss-up. I mean, if you have three SEC losses before the bye and you're sitting 2-4, that's a tough ass down the stretch to win four of your next six, in my opinion, Chase.
Yeah, I certainly agree with that. Ty Richardson, covering the Arkansas Razorbacks here with ESPN Arkansas. Appreciate you coming on with us today, Ty. Certainly enjoyed that, and we'll have to get you on again soon.
Chase, appreciate the time, man. Can't wait for SEC football. Just sad the SEC on CBS no longer exists. We don't have that great music to look forward to this fall.
The best music. Thanks, Ty. That was Ty Richardson. Appreciate his time of talking some Arkansas football with me earlier this week. He is from ESPN Arkansas. Also hitthatline.com, covering the Razorbacks. And we'll get to Arkansas later on when we get to our make or break games coming up a little bit later on. But right now we're going to have a little fun here with our Who Said This, with our quote from a current or former SEC football coach. One of us will read the quote. The other will guess who it is. And let's see, Chris, I'll let you go first. What's your quote for Who Said This this week?
Okay, here's my quote. It is awfully important to win with humility. It's also important to lose. I hate to lose worse than anyone, but if you never lose, you won't know how to act. If you lose with humility, then you can come back. Who said it?
That feels like such a coach quote, you know, like,
yeah,
I could see a number of coaches saying this. All of these words don't sound like this coach, but I'm going to go with, is that Nick Saban?
No, but you're close. I head faked you, which is not a nice thing to do to your head. To your co-host, but I figured you didn't think I'd go two Bear Bryant quotes 2 weeks in a row, but I did.
Wow. See, I was thinking that. I thought he wouldn't do that 2 weeks in a row. So.
Right. That's not very nice of me, but it, maybe it makes for a better show.
Yeah. And I can totally see Bear Bryant saying that. That was a good one though. So who said this, Chris? If you think there's a such thing as an unimportant game, just try losing one.
I think Bear Bryant could have said that. I think Nick Saban could have said that. I think Steve Spurrier could have said that. I'm going to wonder, though, because you wouldn't think I would guess the same guy that I just gave you. So I'm going to guess Bear Bryant.
You know, you're close. You're close.
Nick Saban.
No.
No.
Gene Stallings.
Oh, okay. Right family of coaches.
Yes. Yeah, so we both went the Alabama Avenue there this week. You said Bear Bryant, you said Saban, and I want to say just go right in the middle, you know, the middle of those two guys. That was a Gene Stallings quote there. He had some good ones too over his time. You know, you He kind of gets overshadowed a little bit by Bear Bryant and Nick Saban in Alabama, but Gene Stallings, ton of success there as well.
Yeah, very underrated coach. That's, you know, we don't think about him much, but how many coaches won a national title and they're maybe like the third best coach ever at your school?
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. That is very true. So there's some fun there as we both went to the Alabama coaching tree there for our Who Said This week. We'll shift over to some rankings. We like to rank things here on the show. And today we're going to look at rank our top five offensive units in the SEC this year. So we'll start at five. We'll count down one being who we think will be the best offensive unit. But we'll, again, start at five, work our way down. Chris, I'll let you go first. Who do you have at number five as we rank our top five offensive units?
All right, at number five, I've got the Missouri Tigers because, boy, do they bring back a lot of guys. They bring back Brady Cook, who just did such a fantastic job last year. They bring back just a very experienced receiving room. Luther Burden, they got depth, and Theo Weiss, Mookie Cooper's been there forever. Brett Norfleet, their tight end, kind of gets lost in the shuffle. Don't know about the offensive line as much. They lost Javon Foster, but they returned three starters. Don't know about running back either, but nobody was talking about Cody Schrader coming in the last year, and he was the most productive running back in the league. You have guys that have made plays before. You've got a coach who runs a system who has made the most out of it, at least he did last year. I like Missouri's chances to be in that top five.
Yeah, that's I like that. I mean, having them in the top five, I think they really have a chance, especially with an offensive minded coach to do that. Number five, I've got one of the newcomers. I've got the Oklahoma Sooners. They're breaking in a quarterback in Jackson Arnold. But they've got so many guys around him. They've, you know, whether it's transfers, Deion Burks, who's come in, who is fantastic. You think of guys like Andrew Anthony, Nick Anderson, Jalen Gibson. Those are guys who last year were averaging more than 20 yards per catch. And if you have, you know, four or five guys who can do that, and your quarterback's able to get it to him, which I think Jackson Arnold is, just based off what I've seen from him in the spring, like, I think they're going to put up some big numbers, you know. Now, you know, how are they going to fit in the SEC? We'll have to see. I think it's going to be a good season for Oklahoma. But once Jackson Arnold really settles into his role, which I don't think is going to take long, then watch out, I think, for Oklahoma's offense. I think it could be really good. So I've got them at number five, just because I think they're really good, but I also think there's also some questions just with the young Jackson Arnold. But yeah, I've got them at number five. Who is your number four offensive unit in the SEC?
Number four, I got Alabama, and we kind of hashed out Alabama's potential issues earlier in the show, but Alabama's got Jalen Milroe, who just got better and better and is going to be one of those guys on that short list for potential Heisman finalists. You got Kalen DeBoer, who just is a tremendous offensive coach. You saw what he did with Washington last year. Again, we don't know what all the parts are going to look like. They did get Caden Proctor back in the spring after they lost from Alabama. Hey, you bet on Alabama, and I'm going to say the Crimson Tide, even if we don't know exactly what it looks like or going to be in that top five.
Yeah, and we think the same there on number four. I've also got Alabama. And when you go out, Nick Saban was such a defensive-minded coach. Like, he's a brilliant defensive coach. He spent a lot of time with the defensive backs. Alabama goes out after Nick Saban and hires one of the best offensive minds in the country. And the two other ones are in the SEC. But Kalen DeBoer, what he was able to do with this offense at Washington, Michael Penix, and we saw the numbers he put up. I think he is such a great offensive mind, and he translates so well to the players. Michael Penix has been in Tuscaloosa recently. I'm sure he's had a lot of great conversations with Jalen Milroe and helping him as well. And so I think this Alabama offense, and it may take a couple of games to get settled in, but I think we're going to see the Alabama offense just continue with how we've seen it go, and maybe even get better under a coach like Kalen DeBoer. So, yeah, I mean, we both got the tide there at number four. Who is your number three team, Chris?
Well, I've got Ole Miss. Feels like a Lane Kiffin offense has got to be in here in your top five just because it's Lane Kiffin. Oh, by the way, you know, two of the top three or four receivers in the league. They got a third-year quarterback who's been very productive. Now, they lost Quinshon Judkins. That hurts, but they've got three running backs at least who can play. You know, maybe not the top offensive line in the league, but a good enough one. I mean, the quarterback, the receiver room, and the presence of Lane Kiffin should be good enough alone to get Ole Miss in the top five in history, I think, backs me up here.
Yeah. You know, I think, I'll get to them in a minute. But I've got Georgia number three. And, okay. You know, and I went back and forth in this because I think Carson Beck is a great quarterback. He's just got so many new guys around him. Like, I don't think there's a doubt that they're going to be on the same page and they're going to put up great numbers and win a lot of games this year. But just you lose guys like Ladd McConkey, you lose a guy like Brock Bowers, who is a big target. Now you got a great running back now in Trevor Etienne, but you know, who's going to step up around Carson Beck? Who's going to be his targets to throw to? Again, they brought in some good wide receivers out of the portal and some guys who were on the roster last year who have stayed and have gotten better, I know. But, you know, I've got them at number three just because of the questions. Like, Carson Beck is going to be able to get the ball up in the air and he's going to be confident in throws. But are they going to have guys who can make plays and catch them? That's why I've got them at number three. But, again, I think they're going to be a pretty good offense there. So, who is your number two team, Chris?
I've got Texas, and it's got all the ingredients. You've got an offensive-minded head coach who's had success since Steve Sarkisian, of course, went to the playoff last year. Lindy's position rankings in the SEC, number one quarterback room. Of course, we know about that, Quinn Ewers and all the talent behind him. Number two running back room, number two wide receiver room, you know, pulling Isaiah Bond from Alabama, and number one offensive line. Any questions here? Maybe the question is, Chris, should you have had him at your number one spot?
Yeah, I've actually got Texas at number two as well, and you said a lot of what I was going to say. To me, there's no better offensive coach in the country than Steve Sarkisian. And just talking with people who were close to the Alabama program when he was there, just the way he approached game planning for every game, the changes that he made in the game and how quick he was able to make offensive changes and change the scheme and be successful is incredible. He's a very gifted offensive coach, and he's got the pieces around him to have another great year. Quinn Ewers, incredible quarterback. If something happens, well, hey, you got Arch Manning right behind him. I mean, two fantastic quarterbacks. Isaiah Bond transferred in to help the wide receiver room. You got running backs, CJ Baxter, who's fantastic running. I think this is going to be an incredible offense for Texas. I think this is a Texas team who might could go all the way because of the weapons they have on offense. So I've got them at number two, but I agree with you. Yeah, the only question is, like, could you put them at number one? And I think you definitely could. Who's your number one?
Well, I've got Georgia, and maybe that's overstating it, but Georgia right now has got the quarterback who is the top favorite to win the Heisman, certainly was great a year ago. And sometimes it's not who you don't have. You mentioned, and I think the Brock Bowers loss, I mean, he may be the best tight end in the history of SEC football. And they did without him last year and still won everything but one game. Sometimes it's who you like. Let's look at their wide receiver room just the last few years. They get Ra-Ra Thomas from Mississippi State, Dominic Lovett from Missouri, guys that were probably the top receiver on those teams at decent programs. They were afterthoughts at Georgia the last couple of years. They landed a guy in London Humphreys that I don't know how much the SEC, you know, community at large knows him, but he was a really good player at Vanderbilt, you know, probably a top three or four kid on their team. He went to Georgia in the spring. I don't know. He's going to crack their top three. You look at the offensive line, Tate Rutledge, Xavier Truss, guys like that feel like they played forever. Look, Georgia always figures it out. They've got depth coming out their ears. I'm going to ride with Georgia. Maybe it's recency bias. Maybe I should have been more creative, but that's where I went.
Okay. And I think that's a good choice. I've got the Ole Miss Rebels at number one. Based off Lane Kiffin, for the first time, has a third-year starting quarterback in Jackson Dart. And I mentioned how great of an offensive mind Steve Sarkisian is. I think Lane Kiffin is probably the second greatest offensive mind in the country. And so for him to have a third-year starting quarterback, hit the portal hard, brought in some really good guys. He's got a great receiver room for Dart to go to. You mentioned he lost Quinshon Judkins, but he's got other great running backs in as well. And guys who can also, you know, catch some passes out of the backfield as well. So I think Lane Kiffin is just so creative on offense. With another year with Jackson Dart, I think he's going to be even more creative in the way they work some things. So I think this could be one of the most exciting, probably the most exciting and explosive offense in the SEC this year, with the creativity of the mind of Lane Kiffin. So I'm excited to see what Ole Miss can do. And if they look the way I think they will offensively, they're going to be playing well into January, I think,
yeah,
for the Rebels.
Chase, let's ponder what we left out for a minute, okay? Okay. I didn't have Oklahoma on there. That might be a mistake. Neither of us had Tennessee on there.
Yeah,
that's one that you're like, oh boy, do I really put this list together and don't put Josh Heupel and those guys on there? But that's the kind of league we're covering this year.
Yeah, it is. And that was funny you say that, because I was really going back and forth on Tennessee of whether I wanted to put them in that five spot or Oklahoma, how I want to do. But I feel like, and I put Oklahoma in there with a freshman, you know, first year starting quarterback.
Yeah.
Nico, though, at Tennessee, I think is going to be a great quarterback. I still want to wait and see. I think they would be sick if we kept going. I think they would be number six. Tennessee would be number six on my list, because I got to see how the Tennessee offense rolls. Heupel's a great offensive coach as well. You know, he understands that quarterback position because he was a quarterback. I have to wait and see. I feel like if this Tennessee offense is going to be like the 2022 Tennessee offense, or if it's going to be kind of the offense that took a step back last year. I've just got to wait and see before I, you know, put everything in on Tennessee. But they were so hard to leave out of this list. I see what you're saying there.
And I think what you're saying between the lines, it depends on quarterback play. And let's look 2 years ago what they turned Hendon Hooker into. And I just think Joe Milton, it just was, you can only do so much with a quarterback, and it probably just wasn't going to happen with him. I feel like Nico is closer to Hendon Hooker than he is Joe Milton. And if so, I probably am the one that made a mistake leaving him out. But I mean, goodness gracious, Oklahoma. I mean, there's some other offenses we're not even mentioning. We talked about how Florida's got some players. Kentucky's got a really good receiving room, flipped it over at quarterback with a former five-star guy. LSU, my goodness, Garrett Nussmeier.
Yeah.
Really talented kid. You know, Jeff Lebby, great offensive mind. Now, Mississippi State is not going to crack the top five this year, but he's an offensive mind that could be in anybody's program somewhere. I mean, you got a lot of choices on this list.
Yeah, and I think what could be cool, and I can make note of this, is to go back, you know, in December and look at this list compared to who actually finished top five in the SEC in offense, because I think our list could be much different in December, because you mentioned a team like LSU or Tennessee. You had Missouri in your top five. I didn't in mine, but they could be one of those teams. I think LSU could be borderline as well to be in this top five for sure. I mean, I think Garrett Nussmeier is going to step in to do a great job after what Jaden Daniels did. So, there's so many great offenses in the SEC. It was hard to narrow it down to five.
Yeah, it really was.
All right, so that's our top five offensive units in the SEC. We'll move into our likely or unlikely. We'll throw out a couple of scenarios apiece and have a chance to answer if we think those are likely or unlikely. I'll start, Chris. Here's my first scenario with likely or unlikely. Do you think this is likely or unlikely? Oklahoma wins 9 games.
Hmm. All right, let's start with the losses that where they're going to be favored to lose. Probably Texas, probably at Ole Miss, probably Alabama. Oh, or at LSU. Yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of, you know, Auburn's no pushover, Tennessee's no pushover. I think I will take somewhere south of 9-3.
Okay. Most of the win totals that I saw when I was looking this up had Oklahoma. Some of them had 7.5. Some of them had 8.5. Yeah. Maybe I would lean maybe towards the 7.5. Just because, I mean, they do have a brutally tough schedule first year in the SEC. But yeah, there's a lot of toss-up games, I feel like, for this Oklahoma team. So yeah, I think that's a good answer there from you. Here is another scenario. Do you think this is likely or unlikely? We see significant playing time from Arch Manning this year at Texas.
Wow. Well, significant playing time looks like a couple things to me. A, an injury. B, a bunch of blowouts. Games Texas could blow teams out. Colorado State, UTSA, ULM, Mississippi State, Vanderbilt, Florida, Arkansas, perhaps Kentucky, perhaps even A&M. That's a lot of games where Aggies, good grief, people will love me for that one. The Longhorns are going to be double-digit favorites. I say if significant playing time means getting a quarter and a half in a half dozen games or more, yeah, I'll take it.
Yeah. I think about Quinn Ewers. He had a great year last year, a little inconsistent the year before. So if we see some inconsistency peak its head, like what does Sark do? I mean, this is kind of a playoff or bust year for Texas. Like, does he go all in on Arch Manning? I think there's some questions around that, some legitimacy to Arch Manning seeing some playing time. So that was my unlikely or unlikely. Give me some scenarios from you, Chris.
All right. Tennessee's James Pierce Jr., does he lead the SEC in sacks? You got some other good defenders in the league, but he, I think, is a leading returning sack guy, so he would seem to have the edge.
That's a good one. Yeah, I think he does have the edge, and I think he will. I'm going to go likely there. None come to my mind right off the bat that I think would outdo him, so I'm going to go likely.
Okay, yeah. Here, I'm interested to see what happens with Harold Perkins at LSU.
Yeah, he might be
a wild card.
Yeah. What is your second scenario?
Yeah, next up for me, Jarquez Hunter at Auburn leads the SEC in rushing. I'll give you my justification. I think he was second team on Lindy's. You saw Montrell Johnson ahead of him. Texas has got good running backs. But I think that Hunter's got a pretty good track record of yardage at Auburn. I feel like, I don't know if the timeshare situation, he'll be competing with other guys, maybe some other guys in this league would be. Quarterback situation, a little shaky, maybe, at Auburn. So I feel like, you know, he might lead the league in carries, which would seem to give you a leg up on that.
You know, that's something I haven't even thought about. And as you were talking, my wheels were turning. Maybe that could be. They brought in some good receivers, but can Peyton Thorne be consistent enough to get it to those receivers, or does he need to be one of those guys that just, hey, let's get it to Hunter and let him go to work? And so, but you said lead the league. I'm going to go unlikely. I think there's a lot. I think he could be up there. I don't think he will be up there. But I think there's a lot of other guys who I could see leading the league. So I'm going to go unlikely.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's like you almost always take the field versus the one option you're given. But it's like, well, you know, who would you put ahead of that guy? So that's what makes it interesting.
Yeah, that really had me thinking. That was a good one, Chris. So that is our likely or unlikely for this week. We'll roll into our final segment here, and that is make or break games. We've chosen three teams. We will share a make or break game, and we'll start with the Auburn Tigers. Chris, who do you think a make or break game is for Auburn this year?
All right, I've got Oklahoma on September the 28th. That's the fifth of five straight home games to start the year. Auburn should be favored in the first four. You win this one, you're 5-0. You know, if you're doing mock playoff rankings, Auburn would probably be in it at that point, just based on body of work. Now, lose that one, you're at best 4-1, and you could be 3-2. Let's play along. You know, maybe there's a loss to Cal in there somewhere. Or Arkansas. I doubt it. I think they're going to be favored to go 4-0, but boy, you beat Oklahoma, and you're going to need it at that point, because the toughest part of your schedule is to come. That gets folks in Auburn excited, I think.
Yeah, and I've actually got that game with Oklahoma as well, and I say that to look at the rest of the schedule. It's your fifth straight game at home. You have got Georgia and Missouri the next two games on the road, including a matchup at Kentucky on the road. So three straight road games after this Oklahoma game. To me, you want to win this one, because that Georgia game is going to be tough, that Missouri game is going to be tough, and on the road at Kentucky will be tough. And so I think if you can get a win here, maybe 5-0, you get all five wins at home, then you roll into these Georgia, Missouri, Kentucky games on the road with much more confidence, and you're in a really good spot if you're 5-0. And so I think the Oklahoma game is going to be huge. I think it's going to be a fantastic game inside Jordan-Hare Stadium. But yeah, I think that I agree with you. That definitely could be a make or break game there for the Tigers. Moving to the other Tigers, LSU, who do you have as their make or break game, Chris?
Boy, this was a tough one, and I had several potential choices. I took A&M on the road October 26th. LSU's first game potentially is an underdog. Let's look at the schedule to that point. Southern Cal, probably going to be a slight favorite. Out South Carolina, would think a slight favorite. UCLA going to be favored. Ole Miss, maybe an underdog, but that's in Baton Rouge, probably not. At Arkansas, that could be the first game, depending on what A&M does, that LSU is an underdog. And boy, you look at what comes after that. Alabama at Florida, Vandy, and then Oklahoma. I think that's a swing game to me, especially on the road.
Yeah. For LSU, I actually went with the November 9th matchup with Alabama, because I think LSU wins this game at home against Alabama. I think there's no doubt they're in the conversation for the college football playoff. You lose this game at home to Alabama, then I think your chances of making the playoff have just gone down a good bit. And so I think this is a game that LSU wants to win, and if they do, they have a great shot at the playoff. Now, if this is their only loss, or, you know, this is their second loss or something, then I could still see them getting in the playoff, but they're going to get a lower seed. But you win this game, I think your chances of being, you know, top six are very high for the LSU Tigers. So I went with that Alabama matchup. And finally, the Arkansas Razorbacks, who would you say a make or break game for Arkansas would be?
Well, when your head coach is on the hot seat, Chase, it feels like all of them are make or break. But I feel like October 26th, Mississippi State, first-year head coach Jeff Lebby, you're Sam Pittman, you lose that one. Feels like it's going to be awfully tough to survive the year, so that's where I went.
We think alike again. I went with that one as well. I mean, you look at their schedule, it's tough. You know, you get Tennessee at home, you get LSU at home, two very good teams, and will be tough ones. But yeah, that Mississippi State game, I feel like that's the one they have to circle. Like, we have to win this, because you have Ole Miss, you have Texas coming up after that one. So I think that will be a big game for momentum, a big game for, like, where's this program at on October 26th there at Mississippi State. So that is our make or break games. That is our fourth episode of the SEC Football Hour. Drop a comment down on anything we were talking about. We'd love to see your comments. You can drop those down in the video. Subscribe to our channel, like this video, share it with your friends. And hey, if you want to sponsor our content, you can let us know as well. Shoot me an email, chase@southeastern14.com, and we would love to have a conversation with you if you would like to sponsor our content here on Southeastern 14. But Chris, as always, enjoyed it. Love talking some SEC football here.
Can't wait for week five, Chase.
That's right. Thanks for joining us. Again, all of our content brought to you by Bet Online. This is the SEC Football Hour.